Margaret's face cleared. "All right, father," she said as she kissed him. "But oh, it seems a horrible indignity to a queen and a woman." I was moving away to the staircase when she called to me. "Where are you going?" I came back and took her hand and stroked it as I answered, "I shall come back when the unrolling is over." She looked at me long, and a faint suggestion of a smile came over her face as she said, "Perhaps you had better stay too. It may be useful to you in your work as a barrister." She smiled out as she met my eyes, but in an instant she changed. Her face grew grave and deadly white. In a faraway voice she said, "Father is right. It is a terrible occasion. We need all to be serious over it. But all the same, nay, for that very reason you had better stay, Malcolm. You may be glad, later on, that you were present tonight." My heart sank down, down at her words, but I thought it better to say nothing. Fear was stalking openly enough amongst us already. By this time, Mr. Trelawney, assisted by Mr. Corbeck and Dr. Winchester, had raised the lid of the ironstone sarcophagus which contained the mummy of the Queen. It was a large one, but it was none too big. The mummy was both long and broad and high, and was of such weight that it was no easy task even for the four of us to lift it out. Under Mr. Trelawney's direction, we laid it out on the table prepared for it. Then, and then only, did the full horror of the whole thing burst upon me. There, in the full glare of the light, the whole material and sordid side of death seemed staringly real. The outer wrappings, torn and loosened by rude touch, and with the colour either darkened by dust or worn light by friction, seemed creased as by rough treatment. The jagged edges of the wrapping cloths looked fringed. The painting was patchy and the varnish chipped. The coverings were evidently many, for the bulk was great, but through all showed that unhideable human figure, which seems to look more horrible when partially concealed than at any other time. What was before us was death, and nothing else. All the romance and sentiment of fancy had disappeared. The two elder men, enthusiasts who had often done such work, were not disconcerted, and Dr. Winchester seemed to hold himself in a business-like attitude, as if before the operating table. But I felt low-spirited and miserable and ashamed, and besides I was pained and alarmed by Margaret's ghastly pallor. Then the work began. The unrolling of the mummy cat had prepared me somewhat for it, but this was so much larger and so infinitely more elaborate that it seemed a different thing. Moreover, in addition to the ever-present sense of death and humanity, there was a feeling of something finer in all this. The cat had been embalmed with coarser materials. Here all, when once the outer coverings were removed, was more delicately done. It seemed as if only the finest gums and spices had been used in this embalming. But there were the same surroundings, the same attendant red dust and pungent presence of bitumen. There was the same sound of rending which marked the tearing away of the bandages. There was an enormous number of these, and their bulk, when opened, was great. As the men unrolled them, I grew more and more excited. I did not take a part in it myself. Margaret had looked at me gratefully as I drew back. We clasped hands and held each other hard. As the unrolling went on, the wrappings became finer, and the smell less laden with bitumen and more pungent. We all, I think, began to feel it, as though it caught or touched us in some special way. This, however, did not interfere with the work. It went on uninterruptedly. Some of the inner wrappings bore symbols or pictures. These were done sometimes wholly in pale green colour, sometimes in many colours, but always with a prevalence of green. Now and again Mr. Trelawney or Mr. Corbeck would point out some special drawing before laying the bandage on the pile behind them, which kept growing to a monstrous height. At last we knew that the wrappings were coming to an end. Already the proportions were reduced to those of a normal figure of the manifest height of the Queen, who was more than average height. And as the end drew nearer, so Margaret's pallor grew, and her heart beat more and more wildly, till her breast heaved in a way that frightened me. Just as her father was taking away the last of the bandages, he happened to look up, and caught the pained and anxious look of her pale face. He paused, and taking her concern to be as to the outrage on modesty, said in a comforting way, "Do not be uneasy, dear. See, there is nothing to harm you.
The queen has on a robe, aye, and a royal robe, too.
The wrapping was a wide piece the whole length of the body. It being removed, a profusely full robe of white linen had appeared, covering the body from the throat to the feet. And such linen! We all bent over to look at it. Margaret lost her concern in her woman's interest in fine stuff. Then the rest of us looked with admiration, for surely such linen was never seen by the eyes of our age. It was as fine as the finest silk, but never was spun or woven silk which lay in such gracious folds. Constrict though they were by the close wrappings of the mummy cloth, and fixed into hardness by the passing of thousands of years. Round the neck it was delicately embroidered in pure gold, with tiny sprays of sycamore, and round the feet, similarly worked, was an endless line of lotus plants of unequal height, and with all the graceful abandon of natural growth. Across the body, but manifestly not surrounding it, was a girdle of jewels, a wondrous girdle which shone and glowed with all the forms and phases and colours of the sky.